they scared of what you represent to them.
Amen. All we represent to them, man, is somebody who needs a haircut.
What you represent to them is freedom.
What the hell's wrong with freedom, man? That's what it's all about.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's what it's all about, all right. But talking about it and being it, that's two different things.
On today's episode, we talk about raising animals for food, getting tattooed, and of course, as always, our top five songs of the week. So sit back and get ready for the ride. All right. Well, welcome to episode 3 of the Unrestricted Podcast. Here we go on our third adventure down this road.
Awesome. Awesome. Still no complaints.
Here with my buddy Miguel. Yeah, nobody's complaining too bad yet, right? So I guess we're still here. So, episode 3. What do we got going on this week? It's been a little interesting around here. I got this situation where I've decided to raise some animals. Like we've talked about before, I moved from California out here to Texas, and you know, part of the idea with that was to get a little bit of property and you know, do kind of the self-sustaining thing a little bit. You know, raise a little bit of my own food, you know, grow a garden, that kind of thing. So my first adventure into getting into, you know, doing that thing is I decided to raise quail. You know, a lot of people are like, well, you know, why not chickens first? Well, you know, I did my research and I do want to do chickens eventually, but quail, just from everything I can hear, they're a lot easier. It's kind of an easy way to sort of get into, you know, the idea of raising birds and raising your own food without a whole lot of out-of-pocket, without a whole lot of experience, and you can't really screw it up too bad.
So, wait a minute. So, you researched and you found out that quails are easier to raise than chickens.
Than chickens, yeah. So, essentially, quail are easier to raise than chickens because the specific breed of quail that I looked into, which is a Coturnix quail, they're a Japanese breed, and they've been bred specifically to live in cages, you know, fairly small cages. They need about a square foot of cage per bird, and really only about a 12 to 14 inch tall cage. So it's a pretty small footprint. You know, it's about a foot tall, and about a foot square by a foot, you know, is what the bird needs.
Like a doubled up shoebox, maybe.
Essentially, yeah, 12 inches by 12 inches by 12 inches.
Oh my god!
You know, but obviously you're gonna have more than one, so the cage isn't just gonna be 12 inches by 12
yeah,
inches.
Yeah, yeah,
but
yeah, yeah.
If you have a few in a cage and you have, you know, that many square feet, that's about what they need.
If you had a solitary confinement for a chicken or a quail that was acting up, right, then you could.
Well, yeah, I suppose, but yeah, you know, it's not, you know, the solitary confinement thing is maybe a little bit of a punishment. This isn't really a punishment. This is what these birds have been bred to live in these conditions for actually thousands of years. There's a lineage on these things that actually goes back to the ancient Egyptians of raising these specific birds.
For a quail?
But the Japanese are more of the known breeders of these birds for, you know, still thousands of years. So,
but a quail? All the way back to
Egypt? But anyway, that's what they claim. I mean, I haven't actually traced it back myself, but yeah, that's what they're saying. So, essentially, with these birds being easier than chickens is because it's a smaller footprint. You know, it's less out of pocket. They don't eat much, so you don't have to buy as much feed, which, I mean, realistically, chickens don't eat a lot either, but I can get 9 birds, which means that I'm getting essentially, you know, 8. Well, I started with 9 birds. I have 8 birds now, and we'll kind of get to why that is later. But I essentially get 8 eggs a day out of these birds. And the plan with these was to get, you know, 8 to 10 birds and all females, so they lay eggs, and to have these as strictly my egg layer. So no plans to eat these birds, to raise them up and then to sexual maturity, which is now, and then add a couple of males to fertilize them so that I can incubate their eggs and then grow out their chicks as meat birds.
You get an egg a day?
I get an egg every day out of each bird. So right now I have 8 birds, and essentially I get 8 eggs a day. Now, you do have to keep in mind that it's about a 5-to-1 ratio to a chicken egg. So it takes about 5 of their eggs to equal a chicken egg. So I get just over a chicken egg a day out of
eight
quail that I have.
Here's what I'm getting at. In 24 hours, a quail could actually, like, produce an egg?
Yes. Yes, they would produce one complete viable egg every 24 hours.
No, yeah, okay, yeah. But, it, like, how, like, biologically, it can actually make...
Oh, yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. And chickens do the same thing.
An egg a day?
There are certain breeds of chickens that'll do the same thing.
Really?
Yeah.
Holy
crap. Not unheard of. And that's, I mean, really anybody that lays or that raises chickens for eggs, that's kind of what they shoot for, is the breed that'll do that, you know, and conditions that'll allow it.
That's great. Yeah,
it's the same thing with quail. Like, if they're stressed, or if they, you know, they're not quite in the right conditions, or they don't have the right amount of daylight, they won't do that. But you can supplement light in the winter hours when daylight is shorter, and they'll produce all year
round for
a few years.
Wait, go back. Let's not get too carried away, because okay. I'm not a farmer or whatever.
I'm not a farmer either.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
Okay.
But, like, I'm still tripping on the fact, because, like, and I know it's different with, like, chick eggs and all this other stuff than what you're cooking, than these other eggs, correct? But, so, like, I'm sure a rooster or whatever they call male quails.
Right, yeah.
If he pokes one of them quails, like, she's not going to have a chick the next day, is she?
Well, she's not going to have a chick the next day, but she's going to have a fertile egg.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. If they, you know, get the deed done every day before, you know, that egg is viable, then and it becomes fertile, then yeah, she could lay a fertile egg every day. That's going to be one busy rooster, but yeah.
And then, oh, okay. Wow, what a trip.
Yeah, it's crazy, right?
So if that were like if humans were to do that, every time you screw a chick, she would like, and if we came in eggs, like, we would, like, she could have it.
Well, yeah, theoretically.
Wow.
That's crazy, right?
What a trip. Okay, so go back to your...
Okay, I don't remember where it was. So yeah, egg a day out of those guys, you know, and they're low cost. They don't cost much. Their food doesn't cost much. It's about, you know, $25 to $30 for a 50-pound bag of food. And the reality of it is that I've had them for about 3 months, and I'm only about halfway through a 50-pound bag of food.
For 8 of them. Through all 8 chickens or quails or whatever.
Yeah, 8 quail. 8 quail have ate about 25 pounds in 3 months.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, it's super easy, you know, and you gotta clean up a little bit, you know, but their waste is very compostable. So it's good, you know, it's good for compost. You can make good soil out of it, so I can grow good vegetables and all that good stuff.
Then you can eat them at the end?
Fuck. I found out... Then when they're done making eggs, you get to eat them. Like I said, the idea with these guys was to keep them around, get eggs out of them, you know, breed them, and then incubate their eggs, and then you know, to use the chicks that I grow out from the incubated eggs to grow out meat birds. You know, it takes about 6 weeks to full sexual maturity. So once they get to that point, then they can be, you know, butchered and graduated to the freezer. And you get yourself a pretty decent meal. And even if I were to sell them, quail goes for good money. Little quail.
How big, I mean, let's say compared to a water bottle, right? A regular, not a...
Well, it all depends on how much water you're drinking. And what
size exactly.
Your water
bottle
is,
just your standard.
I mean, they're full grown, the big ones, you know, they're about, you know, I guess... Maybe a little smaller, around than a football. Oh, you know, really? I mean, you can grab them with one hand. Like, you can grab them over the wings with one hand. You can't wrap your fingers all the way around them.
Could you throw it?
But you can grab them well enough to restrain them, you know, with one good-sized hand.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, they're pretty big. I've seen some where, you know, just before slaughter or whatever, they're about a pound.
Huh.
You know, so they're pretty decent size. They're actually, to tell you the truth, they're a little bigger than I thought they were going to be. You know, just doing some research on them and seeing pictures of them in video and stuff like that. And then actually getting them and growing them to full size, they're a little bigger than I thought they were going to be. I mean, not too big, but...
Bigger than a pigeon.
What's that?
Bigger than a pigeon.
Yeah, like a fat pigeon.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they're pretty good size. So to start off our adventure, I actually ended up with 9 female birds, and I had built myself 2 cages. So I split the birds. I actually got 4 of they have different colors. They're essentially the same bird, but they're different coloring. So I put 4 of one color in one cage and 5 of the other color in another cage, and I'm thinking what I ended up having was a little bit of an overcrowding situation. But basically I had one bird that I noticed was a little ruffled up one day. Her feathers were kind of screwed up. And then the next day I noticed that she had a spot on her face that was kind of bloodied. And I thought, well, what the hell is that? And then the next day I went out there and her back was completely plucked of all her feathers, and she just had these like dry blood spots all over her back from where her feathers had been plucked out. And I thought, well, what the hell did that, you know? And it turns out it was the other birds. They were just a little bit stressed, and they decided that she was the weak one and she needed to go. And they started picking on her.
Fuck her.
It was crazy. Huh? So I took her. Yeah, exactly. They were like, "Yeah, fuck you. You know, we're the one. You're the one we don't like."
Oh my god!
So I ended up having to separate her out, and I put her in a little individual cage that I had, just to see if she would heal up. I wanted to make sure that there wasn't something wrong with her. You know, sometimes animals are like that. Like, they'll pick out the sick ones. You know, but
the
I don't
weak
think this
ones.
Was the case. Yeah, exactly. I don't think this was the case. I think this was just an easy target for them to say, hey, you know, we're big enough, we're old enough, we need to get rid of something around here. So she started to heal, and I came to the conclusion that I was not going to be able to put her back in the cage with the other birds. So I ended up deciding that she needed to graduate to the freezer, and it was time for her to be slaughtered. Yeah, well, yeah, no, she was full size, so it's perfectly okay. But, you know,
okay.
I didn't get to keep her. It was perfectly okay. So I didn't necessarily get to keep her for what I wanted to, but, you know, I told my wife when we first started this little adventure, you know, when I brought the birds home, I said, hey, you know, come take a look at the birds. She says, you know, I don't want to see them because we're going to eat them, and I don't want to see them. I said, well, the plan isn't to eat these birds particularly. I said, these birds are supposed to stick around and provide, you know, and provide eggs.
We're going
to
eat their babies.
You know, the plan is we're going to eat their babies, exactly. So she reluctantly said, okay, and she came out and looked at them. She's like, I told her, I said, yeah, they're not even cute. And she comes out there, and of course, the first thing she does, oh, they're so cute. I said, well, they don't get names. Don't name them. Don't become attached to them. You know, they're not pets. We may have to slaughter one of them someday. And she says, yeah, I know. So, you know, I told her that when we first started. And then through this process, I'm pretty much the one that's been taking care of them and doing all that stuff. And, you know, I'm not going to say that I'm attached to them or grown any kind of a relationship. But it's more of an understanding, you know, between us. I care for the birds, and therefore I care about the birds, but it, not like in the same way that I do one of my dogs.
But
it's not a family member, but I care about them.
You care,
I care about their well-being.
Yeah,
their
you
life.
Care about you care about them in the fact that they're gonna provide you a meal, like going out. I'm
yes.
getting bread. I want to get wheat bread. And I want to get certain kind of type of ham, not just, you know. What
well, and not just that. I mean, you do care about them because they're ultimately living creatures.
Yeah.
And they, you know, that you want to make sure that their life is as good as it can be. And you, as much as you say, well, I don't really care because I'm going to eat them.
No, still.
When you
right.
have to feed them every day and they rely on you to be fed and to get water
right.
and to be alive, you care about them, you know, about that their life is as good as it can be, regardless of what the end result is going to be, you know, or, you know, what it needs to be, what you're planning on it being, or any of that. So I decided that I needed to basically butcher this bird. And I'd never done it before. I'd never done it with any animal before. You know, and it was, I don't want to say it was difficult. I didn't start crying or I wasn't able to not do the job or anything like that. But I felt a little differently about it than I guess I expected I would. And because I now feel the way I feel about those birds, it made sense that I felt that way. You know, I was very... you know, grateful and appreciative for the life that that bird gave, you know, gave to me and my family to provide food, you know, and it was interesting. It was just a different experience than I guess I expected it to be. I don't want to say spiritual or religious or anything like that, but it was a different experience is really the only way that I can explain it. You know, I didn't go out and hunt the thing. Obviously, I
picked her
up out of the cage. So maybe that would be even
yeah.
different. But there's just an appreciation there that I guess I wasn't anticipating.
And I get, I'm going to assume, because like I've never been hunting, but I'm going to assume that like if I see a buck 150 yards, 200 yards away or whatever the case may be, and then you pluck it, I mean, you shoot it, I don't pluck it, but you shoot it, and by the time you get to it, you're hoping it's dead. You know what I mean? And
right. Well, that's yeah. That's,
right.
I mean, that's why you practice to do it correctly.
Right. Right.
So
no. Yeah. Yeah.
As,
yeah. 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 Exactly.
Humane of a death
exactly.
as possible. Yeah.
Yeah. And but as compared to taking it in your own hands, and
yeah.
you know what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
it's different.
Yeah. And just saying,
and that's
you know,
essentially what this had to be. Yeah. So
how'd you do it?
I don't want to go into the graphic
details
of how I did it, but. I mean, if you want to go there, we can go there.
That's
but
right.
there are plenty of videos on YouTube if you're interested in the process of butchering a quail. You can go look that up on YouTube, and you can have multiple videos within seconds.
Here's a little, I don't know what you want to call it. I grew up in a Mexican family, and my dad was born in 1916, so he's you know old. And he's seen a lot of whatever. He's seen a lot of things in his life. And he was raised in Texas and whatever. And we've killed rabbits in our backyard. We've killed goats. We've killed, we went out and slaughtered a pig. But I remember being a child and my dad came home with a cage of like, 8 or 10 rabbits or whatever it was, and they slowly started disappearing, and we're just like, well, me, because I would go out there and feed the damn things, you know, and I'm like, it looks like one of them is missing. And then I would count. Sure enough, he'd be missing, you know. And anyways, long story short, the way I found out is I opened a freezer one day, and there's a headless, furless, gutless carcass.
It's a rabbit.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
Looks a lot like a rabbit.
Yeah, you know, oh my God, we're eating rabbit, you know, and oh shit, yeah, but it was so.
Actually, I've been thinking about rabbits as well.
Oh yeah.
Raising
yeah,
a couple
yeah.
of rabbits.
Yeah, they're tasty.
Getting that thing going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I don't know how much a bigger property you have, man, but why not get a couple pigs too or whatever?
Well, I... Yeah, I don't really want pigs. They're a little more troubled. I've got a little property, but I don't think I have enough for a pig. I do still have neighbors that are, not terribly far away. So
oh, okay.
I think for now we'll stay with the poultry and maybe some rabbits, and we'll see how that goes, how that works out for us.
Did you have a?
So that's
go ahead.
What? What do I have?
A pig incident? Did I see something on Facebook?
Oh yeah. Yeah, I got a text the other night from my neighbor at about midnight. Said there's a hog in my yard, or in his yard. And then by the time I got up, it was in his yard, or in my yard. So I go out there. He sent me a text. He says, there's a hog in the yard. We got lots of wild hogs out here in Texas. So, of course, I'm thinking the worst. This is some crazy wild boar with tusks, and it's trying to kill everything. And so I grabbed my gun, and I was like, I go running out the door, and there's him and his sons are standing out there with a pellet gun and a broomstick. I said, what the hell are you doing? He says, this thing just won't go away. It's not aggressive or anything. It's just a nuisance. So I squirt it with the hose, and the damn thing turns around and lays down while I'm squirting it with the hose. So we ended up chasing it off. It was an interesting experience. That's the first time I've ever had one. I mean, I don't know if that's the first time there's ever been one on my property. I'm sure it isn't. But that's the first time my neighbors called me up and said, hey, we got to come take care of this. And I go out there, and there's a 125-pound hog running around in my front yard.
Jesus Christ.
That's a little one. This one wasn't that big.
When I think of, and I've seen them on TV and whatever, but I when I think of a pig, for some reason I always think of the pig. I think his name's Arnold on Green Acres. You know?
Yeah.
You know,
little pink.
Yeah.
Potbelly pig.
Yeah, or whatever. Like, look at Arnold. Yeah, okay, no, cool. This
wasn't one of those. This was a nasty black monstrosity of a thing.
Really?
But they still taste like bacon, so whatever.
Free range. Free range.
Exactly.
Oh, man.
So,
oh, buddy.
Yeah, those are the adventures out here on the old homestead. So what about you? What do you got going on?
Oh, not a whole lot, man. I mean, I just finished got a tattoo on the side. I've done some work on you, right? Yeah, I've done some work on you.
Yeah.
That Frankenstein, huh? Yeah.
Yep.
I was tattooing today, and I got a nephew. Well, he's my niece's fiance and whatnot. And we're just chit-chatting about tattoos, of course, and whatever. And I just started thinking about how tattooing has changed. You know, I'm sure we've all seen it and felt it and, you know, whatever. Because, you know, it used to be, like, left for the... I don't know, the lower class, I guess, or the lesser than.
The rebels.
Yeah, even beyond. Yeah, exactly, the rebel or a sailor, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or a
yeah.
convict or whatnot. And it's funny because me and my brother were talking, my younger brother were talking about 4 months ago or whatever, and I got a couple of tattoos on my neck, and he said, man, I remember when you first got your first neck tattoo, and it was like back in 1990. And it's all back then, when you got a neck tattoo, it was like serious. You know, you had to be committed, you know, and it was. And nowadays, like, if you ain't got a neck tattoo, it's like it's pointless,
yeah.
You know?
And you're nobody, right?
Yeah.
You're a sissy. You ain't got no tattoos. Yeah. There's nothing on your neck.
Yeah. It's feel like, oh my God. The whole tattooing business, you know, of course, it just exploded, and from some angle, like, I'm glad it's so acceptable in the workplace and whatnot, but it just took some fun out of it, man. It's just taking some, you know, it's like, dare I say, like Harleys, you know what I mean? I'm not even a Harley rider, but I'll ride a Harley, you know? I mean, but now it's just no back to tattooing.
Well, yeah, I mean, bikers have been against the yuppie Harley guys for a long time. It's kind of the same thing,
right? Yeah, exactly.
Sort of that old school, you know, old school traditional come up, this is what tattoos are about.
Yes.
To people getting them now, not because of what they're about or what it stands for to have a tattoo, but because of the art that the tattoo is.
Right.
And it's not a bad thing.
No. Well, to some extent.
But yeah, it's a change in society. Yes. They've now accepted it. Mm-hmm. And the thing that gets me about it, I think, is some of the new artists that are coming out. Fantastic artists.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing.
You know, I mean, just some really amazing, amazing stuff coming out that nobody would have ever thought to do even 10 years ago, 20 years ago. But I also have a little bit of a thing for the way that these guys are learning how to tattoo, and they're not doing it in the traditional methods, you know, where, you know, I worked in a tattoo shop as somewhat of an apprentice for a little while. And, you know, you start out by cleaning the bathrooms, you know, and that's just the way it starts. Yeah. You don't start out by tattooing somebody, you know, and I've seen too many people just, you know, I can draw and boom, I've got a machine in my hand. And someone's teaching me how to tattoo.
Well, yeah, exactly.
You've got to learn the respect for the industry and the respect for the art before you can just go putting it out there. I mean, it's one thing to be a good artist and be capable of doing a good tattoo, but you got to understand, and I don't want to say that you can't understand it if you don't go through those things, but if you go through those things, you're going to understand that you're putting something on someone for life. It's a mark that'll be on them forever, and you're the one responsible for it, you know, and that you got to understand that.
And okay.
And I think with laser removal surgery, just it takes something away from that, right? It's, if it's fucked up, you just get it removed and you start over again.
Yes, that's, you know, whereas before, like, hey, I'm going to get covered up. And you have a monstrosity of a tattoo as a cover-up, you know, and it's just, hey, that's just part of the gig, you know? And
right,
but
now, yeah.
But now it's just...
You know, and all the guys that I know that used to come up, and they come up the old school way, you know, the grunt in the shop and just, you know, earning their rank their way through to get the privilege of being able to pick up a machine and put ink into skin.
Yes.
You had two options.
Yes.
You were either going to the grocery store and you were buying oranges and tattooing oranges so you could learn how to do it, or you were tattooing yourself.
Yes.
Because nobody else was going to let you do it. You would tattoo shitty tattoos on you, and that was the way you would learn the respect that it would take before you would be comfortable and able to put a tattoo on somebody else. Now, obviously, I'm talking the industry. And not, you know, the jailhouse tattoos or,
you know, what's,
you know, any of that type of stuff.
Speaking of that.
I can't speak of that because I don't know nothing about it. But
I can't, right? So at 18, I go to prison. 18, 19.
You fucking told me you went to college.
Look, whatever. Okay, I went to... it's a Cal State, right? It's a
right?
So... You know, I'm in prison, and I used to draw. Well, I started tattooing when I was 13. And again, just like this, the way you said, but like I wasn't running a shop. I was just a total scratcher, you know, and just wanting to do it. Had plenty of little homies that would, you know, line up, and you know, they just wanted me to get better. And once I got to prison, like, you meet other artists. Like, and there's some incredible art that come out of, you know, convicts, the tattooists, like, they all gather around and they all, like, you know, share each other's, I don't want to say secrets or whatnot, but they're so willing to help out.
Techniques, they help each other out.
Yeah. And that, you know, and so when I was in prison or college, when I was in college, I gravitated towards the artist, man, and they took me in and they showed me some of their stuff. And like, there's a guy named Mitch Smiley. I don't know if he's still alive or dead now, but he's a lifer. I met him in 91, and he had been down for 30 some odd years already. And I used to see his stuff. And when I got out of prison, I mean, when I graduated, I would see some of his stuff in magazines, man. Mitch Smiley, Behind the Walls, tattoos. And it's like, oh, shit. And I got a piece from him.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. And it's just like, man, I wonder if this guy's even still alive or whatnot. And if he is, and if you're out there and listening or whatever, hey, Mitch Smiley, hey, thank you. You know, you're a great inspiration. And if you're dead, then you're dead. But, yeah.
Thank you anyway, right?
Yeah, exactly. And then, but back then, too, it's the same thing out here. Like, some artists would actually, like, if you gravitated towards the Oriental type of artwork, then, like, there's plenty of artists that would actually go to Japan or, I don't know, I guess China. I have no idea. But they would get involved with that culture and learn the, you know, because all this stuff right. has yeah. meaning. It all has meaning.
Right.
You know, I,
but yeah, it all comes from somewhere.
Exactly.
If you're going to pick a style like that,
exactly.
you've got to understand where that style comes from and why.
Exactly. Like if you draw a
koi, yeah, I agree.
If you do a koi fish, I'm not a student of it, but I so forgive me if I'm incorrect. But if you draw a koi fish like with the head going up, that stands for like good luck, you know.
Yeah, or, there's a lot,
yes.
to, especially with Japanese
yes.
with Japanese art. There's a lot
yes,
of
yes.
meanings behind
you know?
The placement and the style.
Yeah. You know, but the same thing
you
with
know, and then,
same thing with like Celtic knots, you know.
Yeah,
yeah. You know, so every you know Aztec work, you know, all that stuff has certain meanings and certain it carries
right.
certain
and just
weight.
Because you can. And just because you can design or draw something in that style doesn't mean that you understand
right.
where it comes from
right.
and why it exists.
Right.
And that's
right.
not to say that everybody nowadays doesn't, because you know, a lot of guys, if they take it seriously, they're going to want to know that stuff.
Okay, yes, yes,
but
yes.
I also see a lot of guys that just go to art school, you know, and they come up and pick up a machine, and it's just a new medium to them.
Yes, yes,
you know,
yes.
There's
hey.
No tradition behind it.
Right.
And that's perfectly
that's,
okay.
Yes.
to get good artistic quality tattoos, but I think there's just something a little different about a tattoo that comes from somebody who has a little more understanding or has taken the time to understand the tradition of where some of that stuff comes from. And that's my kind of take on it. I think it's about tradition, you know, and as much as the new stuff, you know, is better and things have evolved and not just in tattoos, everything evolves, but I think it's still good to understand, you know, the evolution and the tradition behind everything.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
you may not have to know it all, but you can at least kind of get the basics of it, you know, and there's no worse, you know, condition for bad history repeating itself than someone who doesn't understand what history was as they move forward.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
it's kind of the same thing. So
could we say it's the... yuppiness or the millennial, you know, or
well, I think it kind of it falls into, you know, the instant gratification mindset that we're well into, not just heading towards, but well into an instant gratification society where why do I want to take the time to clean the bathroom floors, you know, and set up some other guy's station when I'm a good artist right mm-hmm. now and I can just start learning how to use that machine.
Yep.
Why do
yep.
I want to take the time to study the traditions of, you know, which direction a koi fish can go when I can draw a koi fish right now?
A two-headed
you know,
one.
I think that's kind of the what sort of feeds a lot of this. That and some of these so-called reality TV shows, I think, somewhat of a negative and a positive influence. I mean, the positive influence on it is that it helps society accept, you know, people who have chosen to get a tattoo, I think. And you know, in the past, you wouldn't necessarily be afforded the same opportunities
oh, of course,
as
yes.
you will now mm-hmm. because you were tattooed. Like, for instance, my job. I don't think 20 years ago I would have ever gotten my job just because I have visible tattoos. I mean, I could cover them up, and if I had to, I would. But you know, like if I had a neck tattoo, I could probably have a neck tattoo at my job right now. I work
right.
in a corporate office building in the oil industry, you know, surrounded by guys in suits and ties, and I walk around every day with a short sleeve shirt on with tattoos all over my arms.
Do you wear a tie?
And nobody. Do I wear a tie? No, okay. I don't. And nobody cares, you know. So I think that's one of the benefits to the direction we are and society being acceptable of tattoos.
I wonder, because I don't know, because I've got visible tattoos. I wonder if, I'm sure there still is, just like racism or whatever, but I'm sure there's still some people out there who will look upon you, and even though you may have better skills than the other person at a certain job, that if they see another person that's applying for the same job, and if they don't have tattoos, if they'll choose them over you.
Oh, I guarantee that still happens.
Yeah.
I mean, even, you know, still, I, you know, like I said, I moved to Texas, and, you know, it's still a very
conservative,
you know, Southern Christian, you know, element out here is still very strong. And, you know, I encounter, you know, out and about in town and stuff, you know, older people usually is what I've noticed. And you can just kind of see the judgmental, you know, look on their face. They're kind of checking you out. They're watching you and making sure you're not, you know, getting too close to their purse or whatever that is. You know, I mean, I'm a big, you know, burly guy with a beard and a shaved head, and I got tattoos. You know, my legs are covered in tattoos. My arms got tattoos. So, yeah, I can see the, you know, and I've always been told that there's an intimidation factor to my look. You know, people who know me aren't typically intimidated about, you know, by me unless they piss me off, and then they know it. But I think I can be fairly intimidating looking. And so if people judge strictly by looks,
yes,
and there are still people who do,
oh,
then,
yeah,
then that's what they get,
oh,
you know?
I'm sure we...
And the downside to that is they don't get to know me.
Right,
so
right, right.
That's their, yeah, problem.
And okay, and for instance, like when we first met, I'm sure there was some kind of amongst, you know, maybe not, maybe it might be hard to say now, but you know, some judging between us, like, what the fuck is that guy doing out here? You know, I mean, what the fuck?
Oh, I guarantee it. I, you know, I probably thought, is it just another fucking old gangster?
Some old junkie.
just another old cholo.
Oh, fuck, how funny. How funny.
So, anyway. All right, well, you want to get down to some music?
Sure.
What do we got for our top five this week?
All right, here's what I got. And I guess I'm going to go in no particular order. I guess I'll go down 1 through 5, I guess.
All right. Yeah, whatever you got.
Yeah, I got a band named Motor Soul. The song's called Angerlay. And the only reason I even picked this band mainly is because, when we started doing this show and you came up with the premise of it and whatever, like, honestly, before this, I was just straight radio for a long time. You know, I got a bunch of CDs laying around, and and it was strictly whatever came on the radio I was cool with, man. And, you know, and I got monotonous, but still, you know. But so
as it does,
yeah. And so, you know, but I just, you know, so I started going through just whatever I had in my CD case, and then I found Motor Soul. And again, this is a friend of mine's band. It's they call themselves Not Your Average Mike Ness Ass Kissing Punk Band from Orange County. And I put a link to it on this, you know, on the
that's thing. Kind of funny.
Yeah. You know, because, you know, whatever. I mean, like Ricky, the lead singer Ricky, he's a close friend of mine. And his voice is pretty fucking screaming, I think, you know. And it's funny because anybody who ever went to go see him were like, how come these guys ain't taking off? Why ain't they just like being rocketed? You know what I mean? Because it's really,
yeah,
it's really good music. The drummer Murdoch, yeah, he just, it's like, it's thundering. His drums are thundering, and the bass player Jennifer, you know, she's, you know, makes it look easy and makes it, you know, makes it easy to look at. You know, she's pretty hot. And but anyways, yeah, Angerlay, and they got a couple other, you know, good songs on their CDs, man. But they're just not very, you know.
Yeah, that, I mean, that happens. Is unfortunate that in this music industry, and it's probably worse now than it ever was just because a band is good doesn't mean they're going to make it, because, you know, they might not be, you know, radio friendly, or, you know, video or TV friendly, or whatever it is, the requirement that it has to be. So, you know, there's just something about them that they don't get picked up. But, you know, as far as everybody that goes to see them, that's the best band they've ever seen. So,
you know,
that happens,
yeah,
way too often.
Oh, yeah, way too often, man. It's just sad. But the good thing about it, man, is that we get to experience them when we get to experience them. And I'm sure I'll roll up to some club or some bar or some place one of these days, man, and catch a band and be like, man, why ain't they fucking taking off? You know what I mean?
Well, yeah.
You know?
Then the next one.
Yeah.
The next one's like,
yeah,
why aren't these guys big too?
Yeah.
Well, because we got to wait until Justin Bieber gets out of
exactly. You know, him and all this, whatever. I mean, if you're into Justin Bieber, hey, good for you. You know, my daughter is into Justin Bieber, so I better keep my mouth shut. it's funny. Whatever, you know. So yeah. So if you're out there and you get a chance to look up Motor Soul, it's Motor Soul, one word with the E at the end. Good stuff. Good music. They really don't have anything on YouTube too much, man. But maybe I should post them out there. I don't know. Anyways, yeah. Right, you know, cool. And next one is gonna be Monster Truck.
Yeah, these guys are good.
Yeah,
I like them.
Yeah, yeah. Don't Tell Me How to Live. Yeah, they're fucking. They're on it, man. They're on it, and it's. Dare I say it's righteous? I think like righteous American rock and roll, you know.
Yeah, just good old fashioned, straightforward rock and roll. Yeah. No frills. Yeah, exactly. No nothing. Just what it is.
Yeah, just you know, lyrics are you know screaming. You know what I mean? And it's not metal, you know, which is fine. You know, it's not punk rock, which is fine. You know, and it's not you know blues, which is fine. You know, all different great. Types of music that are out there and none of it is Monster Truck, man. The crazy part is that like they're from Canada, not that Canada sucks, but right, but you know, I mean, it's just the, like you listen to these and you think that's American rock and roll, like
yeah,
you know, not like the Who, you know, they're from like that's British rock, you know, the Stones, awesome. British rock, you know, but American rock, like
just a little different,
you know, American rock, like Ted Nugent, you know what I mean, or you know, George Thorogood or whatnot, it just fits right in there, man. So yeah, Monster Truck, man. If you're out there, you know, if you get a chance to see him or you get a chance to listen to them, man, they're great.
All right, cool.
Harlot Sweetwater Band, I've seen them a few times. Real bluesy, real. How would I put it? Like how do I kind of swampish, like
swampish?
Yeah, you know. I guess you know it's you know even the name of the Harlot Sweetwater sounds like Louisiana, you know. But I think they're from around here. But I've seen them a couple of times from around here. But Creedence, CCO,
oh, okay.
You know, little twangy. You know what I mean?
It's kind of. Southern, it's not southern rock like Lynyrd Skynyrd, but kind of southern bluesy, twangy. Yeah, I got you. They, okay, you know, cool.
They tear it up, man. Check out Going Up the Mountains, a wonderful song. Talk about getting away and leaving everything behind, and kind of like what you did, you know what I mean? Just packed up, and, you know,
and went not all that far away,
Yeah, well, that may be next, right? You know,
eventually,
I'm buying
that. That is the plan.
I'm buying that mountain, you know what I mean? Whatever. Yeah.
That's the plan.
Yeah, so the Harlot Sweetwater Band. Next, it's the 44s Blues Band. And for some reason, real quick, like I'm anxious to get down to the 44s and Thunder Pussy, these last two bands. I don't know why. But the 44s, man, great blues band. The guitar player, the lead singer guitar player, man, he kicks it up a notch. And it's not Dave Mustaine type of guitar, you know what I mean, which is awesome, you know what I mean, but this is this is a different type of, you know, bluesy, obviously.
Dave Mustaine's not playing a whole lot of blues.
But I don't think any very many people can keep up with Dave Mustaine, you know, on the guitar, you know, but there's a lot of real bluesy and so yeah. Now I'm stuck on listening to some Megadeth now, and I want to go and listen to
some. That'll be next week.
Yeah, right?
That'd be the top song for next week, some Megadeth.
Yeah.
Can't go wrong with that.
No, you can't. And the funny thing is that, you know, we all have our own, you know, whatever, our own thoughts about music, man. But, you know, from what we've thrown out there these past couple of weeks, man, I really enjoy what you've been putting out there. Shit that I've never heard, and and it's been
good. We're a little bit all over the place.
Yeah, so. It's awesome, man. It's awesome. Maybe next week it'll be Frank Sinatra and Megadeth.
For sure. Yeah. They totally go together. Yeah. So yeah, I enjoy introducing, you know, putting stuff out there that you know, getting people kind of out of their bubble and introducing them to some other stuff. You know, and I like the same thing for me is like. You know, show me what you got, you know, let's check it out. Let's see if I'm into it. You know, that's I get into new stuff that way. I tend to, you know, move around in the, you know,
band in the
band kind of genres, you know, from blues to like really hard metal.
Yeah, but you were listening to Italian mandolin not too long ago. Or what?
I listen to Italian mandolin every once in a while. It's, you know, it all depends on what kind of mood you're in.
Yeah, exactly. Like you mentioned last week, Linda Ronstadt. Like you could, you know, that was.
Oh yeah,
dude, that's amazing.
Yeah, that was crazy. Yeah, it's funny because I've now introduced somebody else to that. I was like, "Hey, did you know this existed?" And he was like, "Whoa, what the hell is that?" You know,
that's a white chick singing Spanish.
Yeah, what is going on here?
Oh man, yeah. So, all right, the 44s, man, Hanging Tree, great song. Great band, if you get out there to check out Bob, man. And Thunder Pussy. So the song I got up here up this week is Fever. And Thunder Pussy is, I want to say it's, you know, it's an all-female band, but like it's a more of a burlesque type of show, along with their music. Yeah. And it's really, I saw them a couple years back, and I've been it's funny because when I brought them up last week to go through this week, I was all like, I wonder if they're playing soon. And they just played in LA. Oh. You know what I mean? So I was like, yeah, you know. So,
yeah.
You know. But anyway, yeah, Thunder Pussy, if you're out there and you know, check it out. They're a great band, great show. They bring on all these extra females and, you know, and sure it's eye candy and whatnot, but the singer rips, the guitar, you know, right. The, you know, the basses rip, and so does not that females are less than, but in a male dominated
traditionally male dominated industry.
Yes,
right?
Yeah.
You don't see a lot of all girl bands, right? Well, typically, not in like the rock and roll kind of.
Right. What was the last one? Like the Go Go's. Right?
Yeah. No, I mean, there's like L7.
Oh yeah. You know,
there's been a few bands, but they're few and far between.
Yeah. But when they do come up, man, they leave a mark, man. They do sure to leave a mark. And,
oh yeah.
And Thunder Pussy is definitely one of my favorites, man. So if you get out there, so that's what I got: Motor Soul, Monster Truck, Harless Sweetwater,
cool,
44s, and Thunder Pussy, man. What you got going on?
All right, so let's see. I got a song that's called "Call Me Motherfucker." This is a fantastic song. It's by a band.
Motherfucker.
I think they were out of "Call Me Motherfucker." Yeah, that's it. It's a band called Angus Khan. I think they were out of like the Torrance area or something. I had a buddy who was, well after grunge was dead, he was thoroughly convinced that he was going to be the one to bring it back. And so he had some grunge band that he had put together, a three-piece deal, and they used to get up there and just play way too loud and get all crazy. And he was friends with some of the guys from this band, Angus Khan, and they did a couple of shows together. So we used to go check them out, and these guys are just incredible. They're sort of all over the place with like their look. They don't have like one specific vibe. I mean, their bass player looks kind of like a school teacher. And then, you know, and then the singer looks like looks like he should have been in the movie Easy Rider.
Oh shit!
You know, and then they got this guitarist, who the dude gets up and he's got on like an old army, like a Vietnam era army jacket on, and like a World War II era like metal army helmet, and these like sunglasses, and he's up there shredding, and you know, they're kind of AC/DC ish, you know, just that kind of dirty rock. And, you know, he jumps up there. He's got this big box in front of him. And he gets up, jumps up on top of that thing. This is the guitarist. He jumps up on top of this thing, and it's a floodlight inside of it with a micro switch. And it just lights up the whole thing, and he's just standing on top of it. So there's just this silhouette of this dude in this army gear, like, on this guitar jamming. And then he comes out, and he's got a guitar shaped like an AK-47. And he just starts shredding on this thing, and it's just the coolest, you know. These guys, if you get a chance, I'm actually not even sure if these guys are still together. They did this album, it's called Black Leather Soul, and I think they did an album after that, which I'm having a hard time finding. So I'm not sure if they're still together, but if they are, definitely go check them out. They are a really amazing live show for a small kind of bar band. Let's see, next song I got is a complete turnaround from what we just talked about. A song called "Going Home." It's by Kiefer Sutherland. The actor. The actor from 24 just did what he's calling a country album. Listening to it, it's a kind of country, kind of rock. It's a little more, the stuff that is kind of country is a little more like old school country. Not at all new school country. But this song "Going Home" is kind of interesting. It reminds me a lot of the Wallflowers. Bob Dylan's Sons
Band.
And they're okay. I mean, that's not really my cup of tea, but this song's got a pretty good groove to it. I kind of liked it, so I thought it was worth a mention. But yeah, Kiefer Sutherland does the country album. The album's called "Down in a Hole." So I thought that was interesting.
I just find it interesting that, I guess, I'll take a listen to it this week. But
yeah, check it out. Yeah. It's you'd be surprised. He's got a pretty decent voice for what he's doing. Let's see. Next one is a song called "Spiders" by System of a Down.
Yes,
this hands down my all-time favorite System of a Down song. I just have always liked that song. It's off their first album, and I've liked it. There's just something about it. It's, you know, the whole intro is real mellow and kind of slow, and his voice is just really great in that song. I can't say exactly why. I mean, they've got lots of songs that I like. But that particular song, like, if you could say you're only allowed to listen to one System of a Down song for the rest of your life, what's it going to be?
"Spiders."
That's the one I'm picking. So I enjoy that song quite a bit. Let's see. The next one is "Blues at Sunrise." This is Albert King. This is the In Sessions album. It's Albert King with Stevie Ray Vaughan. And every single time I hear this song, I'm completely blown away. Just the story that Albert King tells while they're playing this song. He tells a story about him recording this song with Jimi Hendrix and Janis Joplin. And I'm completely blown away by that whole situation. Like, I mean, if to this day you told me that I could be in the same room while Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, and Albert King recorded a song together, you know, I'd smack you in the face. Yeah. There's no way.
Yeah.
It just isn't going to happen. You know, I mean, obviously now it can't happen, but even back then, you know, anybody who, and the thing is that anybody who was in the room at the time, you know,
like,
I'm going to guess
idea.
That they probably just didn't even know what they were witnessing.
Had no
the
idea.
The level of, like, what was happening at that point, they had no idea.
God.
You know, that was just like, hey, there's a couple cool, you know, at the time, probably a couple cool cats jamming, you know, but it went a little beyond a couple of cool cats. So that would have been just amazing. I love hearing that story.
There's that whore Janice. You know, or whatever.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, right. Let's see how drunk we can get.
Or that pill-popping Jim. Or whatever,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, whatever.
Oh, funny.
So, all right. Well, my last song I got here is an interesting one, too. You know, in light of Chuck Berry's passing recently, I kind of started, unfortunately, it took the fact of me finding out that he had passed away for me to go back and kind of visit his library and refamiliarize myself with what he had going on. You know, I knew some of his songs, but, you know, it's always good to kind of go back and listen to some stuff you knew and go, oh, yeah, and sort of rediscover it on your own, you know. And while doing that, I realized that he did a song that I was very familiar with, but I had no idea that it was him that did it. The song is "My Ding-a-Ling." It's just hilarious. You know, it's about a little kid and his grandmother gives him a ball tied to a string, or two bells tied to a string, and says, "This is your ding-a-ling." Yeah. You know, and he's constantly playing with it. It's hilarious. Yeah. I had no idea it was Chuck Berry.
Man.
So those are my top five for the week. So.
You know, I find it, I don't know why I say odd or whatnot, but like I just, the week before I picked Mm.
Oh, you had a Chuck Berry song,
Johnny.
Last week,
yeah,
right?
Johnny Be Good.
Yeah, Johnny Be Good.
Yeah,
right.
And just but I just the fact that I don't think I put an artist to it because of how many times it's been redone and whatnot.
Right,
whatever.
Right. Yeah.
You know, but we all.
But yes. I think you did mention specifically
yes.
that Chuck Berry was the originator
yes.
of that song.
And
then 1.5 million people have redone it. Yeah.
And then they come to find out that again, like you said, he you know unfortunately passed or whatever. But
I mean, he lived it though, right?
Oh, yeah.
90 years old.
Oh, yeah.
He made it through it all.
Oh, yeah.
Living, you know, a legend.
Yeah, I hate to say it, but like, he was banging white women when it wasn't cool. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Ugh. No, he was definitely partying, I believe. I've seen a few videos of him playing some stuff back in the day, and he looked like he was very thoroughly enjoying himself.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Crazy. So. Crazy. All right, cool. That about wraps it up, huh?
I think that about wraps it up for episode 3. So we'll be back at it again next week. If you want to subscribe to our show, you can check us out at unrestrictedpodcast.com or on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, pretty much anywhere else that you can find your podcasts. You can send us an email at feedback@unrestrictedpodcast.com. You can hit us up on all of our social media, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube at Unrestricted Podcast, and Twitter at Unrestricted Pod. And that's about it. If there's any other way that you want to get a hold of us, too bad. You're going to have to use one of those. So that's about it.
All right.
We're out of here.
See ya.
See you next week.
See ya.
She's not looking, I'm driving down a road trip to Detroit. I'm looking, she's not looking, I'm driving down a road trip.